Hey, New Life Gillette Church, we are thrilled you decided to listen to our teaching on your favorite podcast app. If you made a decision to follow Christ today, would you let us know by visiting yes.newlifegillette.com? Here is this week's teaching.
Oh, it's a good morning. You are in for a treat because you don't have to hear me preach. Jerk. That's who he is. He's a jerk. You all know who's standing next to me because you all watch the Sage Reverie podcast, right? Yeah. Every one of you. The five of you. Yeah. Watch the Sage Reverie. If you want to watch the Sage Reverie podcast, it's on YouTube on the Church 307 page or channel or whatever they call it. You can check it out. We do it on Mondays. However, we're taking a break right now for the summer, but normally we do it on Mondays and you can check it out there. So this is Wes Smith standing with me here, and this is why we have such incredible chemistry, because we have a lot of practice at this. Yeah. So Wes is my boss, and so could you tell him how great I am? That would be great. Just kidding. That was a joke. Yeah. Five people. No, that was more than five. All right. Well, could you please put your hands together one more time and thank Wes for coming?
Yep. Thank you. It is fantastic to be here. I love the chance to be here. You all are the kind of a place that just makes it great to worship God. And thanks for being who you are. Thanks for the way you're allowing God to transform your lives, but also being kind of a light in relationships near you. I hear so many stories about the way now you are sharing who you are and who's God making you to be. And this is just becoming one of those sort of multiplication centers of disciples. You're really sort of becoming what God had hoped for us all along. Keep that up. Like keep that up. And more than just who you are as a person and the way you're kind of letting that out to others, you're doing this now as a church. You are showing that as a church, you're becoming the kind of place that multiplies in God's kingdom. Healthy people like multiply to others, and healthy churches do the same. And I'm hearing you're in the process of mothering, adopting, and helping two other churches get started. One in Casper, Wyoming, and you've been doing a great job with that. That's tremendous. Keep doing everything you feel called to do there. And last week, I think you heard that you're sending one of your own to Spokane Valley, Washington for a plant, a new church there. So excited for the way you are impacting this region and people in this community, because I love this community of people here. But wow, thanks for what you're doing outside of that. You're starting to make a difference in the world. And don't stop. Don't stop. God just keeps pouring blessing on those who keep giving it out, right? So don't stop as a people and as a person. I'm just so grateful to you for what you're doing. Keep that up. Your pastor has given me the chance this morning to share what has become in me a real sort of deep way of looking at life, my relationships, all of my life, especially my relationship with God. And it has, first, it wrecked me, and now is transforming me and is impacting the way I live, the way I lead, the way I'm married, the way I parent. I mean, you name it, it's had a huge impact. And I'm going to share that with you today. I haven't shared this with very many people, but I was prompted to share this out of your pastor said, you know, Pastor Mike said, hey, we're going through Galatians. Can you be reading and praying through Galatians to see what God might prompt you? And I was. And there's these couple verses in Galatians 6 that as I read them, God prompted in me some stuff he's been doing from a story Jesus told. So first, let me read these two verses that sort of woke me up. The two verses are in Galatians 6, and Paul's saying, share each other's burdens. And this way you'll obey the law of Christ. If you think you are too important to help someone, you are only fooling yourself. You're not really that important. And I stopped me because that's kind of harsh. I mean, yeah, we know, but you need to say it. And then God prompted a story again, as I said, that Jesus told. So we're going to read a story that Jesus told. And it may be confusing to you as we read it, because when Jesus tells a story, there's usually like the master who represents God, and then there's usually like a person in the story who does really well, and we try to sort of model after that person. And that is actually the case in this story, but it actually, for the first maybe 2 decades of reading this story and actually being a teacher, preacher, pastor, all that, still really, it's just confusing, and most of us kind of avoided it. But I think God has opened this up, and I want to help you as best I can learn what I think God is teaching me in this passage. So we're going to go to Luke 16, and we're just going to read a story. Now, here's how I want to do it, because it can be so confusing, is I'm just going to read the whole thing. We're going to read, I believe it's 8 verses. We're going to read 8 verses, and then when I'm done, we're going to go back and go part by part and see if we break that out. And I think it might get pretty personal in here, because it has for me. So Luke 16:1 starts this way. Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man who had a manager handling his affairs. One day a report came that the manager was wasting his employer's money. So the employer called him in and said, "What's this I hear about you? Get your report in order, because you're going to be fired." The manager thought to himself, "Now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches. I'm too proud to beg. I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired." So he invited each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asked the first one, "How much do you owe him?" "I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil." So the manager told him, "Take the bill and quickly change it to 400 gallons. "How much do you owe my employer?" "I owe 1,000 bushels of wheat," was the reply. "Here, take the bill and change it to 800 bushels. This is the verse that we struggle with, though. The rich man had to admire the dishonest, and I love this word rascal, like we don't use this much anymore. I know it because my mom used to use it when I was really young, but we haven't used it a long time, but it's not a good thing, right? The rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. And it is true that the children of this world are more shrewd in dealing with the world around them than are the children of the light. What in the world is going on? We have the rich man who represents our master, God, in the story, praising, admiring a dishonest rascal. And then Jesus saying something super offensive to church people. He's saying, basically, we would say in our day, children of the world, like people outside, far from God, in rebellion from God, actually get this better, do this better than, and as I was understanding the story, Wes, they do this better than you do. They do this better than church people. This, and children, what? You mean they lie better? Okay. Good for them, right? Aren't we supposed to not like be dishonest rascals? What is going on here? Let's go back to verse 1 and let's look through it and look at what this manager does that God is wanting us thoughtfully to consider that we might do. Because we know, right? We followed this Jesus for some time, some of us. And we know dishonesty is not, you know, if you've never heard, one of the Ten Commandments is, thou shalt not lie, right? It's just, you know, don't bear false witness is the, right? So, okay, knowing that, it says this, Jesus told this story to his disciples. There was a certain rich man. This represents, as I've said now, the master of our life, right? This represents God. There was a certain rich man who had a manager. Let's just put ourselves in the place of the manager for a moment. And this manager was handling this rich man's affairs. One day, a report came to the manager a report came to the owner that the manager was wasting his employer's money. So and if you read the story, like in many of the original texts, it's not just waste. There's an element of fraud. There's a intentional waste. It's wrong. This isn't like I did my best, but man, we didn't get that one right. No, this is I did not do my best. I wasn't even trying. And by the way, I stole a little bit. That's the idea here, okay? So then in verse 2, he gets called in, right? The employer calls him in. What's this I hear? Get your report in order because you're going to be fired. Here's the deal. It's 10 a.m. You're done. I want you to clean up your desk. Box the stuff up. I want you to leave a last report about where we're at as a company, how much we've lost, what's the real story. Leave that on your desk. Box your stuff up. And at 5 o'clock, that'll be your last time. Say your goodbyes. You're done. This was wrong. You're done. Okay? This is what happens, right? Verse 3. The manager thinks to himself, now again, maybe we're looking at what the manager does to say what is being committed here. The manager thinks to himself, now what? My boss has fired me. I don't have the strength to dig ditches, and I'm too proud to beg. The guy says, wait a minute, I'm out of a job at 5 p.m. Got to put food on the table. What in the world am I going to do? Think through that. I could dig. No, I would lose money digging. I could beg, and in Jesus' day, begging represented a number of different career options, and he decides, I'm not good. Like, I can't persuade people to give me, like, a piece of chewing gum. I'm not good at begging. You know, Jesus tells us, sort of like, he's going through his options, right? He's going through his options. Now, verse 4, I know how to ensure that I'll have plenty of friends who will give me a home when I'm fired. Notice what he's doing. He's facing reality. He's forming a plan. He's forming a plan to be rehired. He's facing reality. He's forming a plan. Verse 5. So he invites each person who owed money to his employer to come and discuss the situation. He asks the first one, how much do you owe him? Verse 6. The man replied, I owe him 800 gallons of olive oil. So take the bill and quickly make it 400. So one of the guys, and this would be like, these would represent three other business owners in Jesus's sort of story village here. Three other business, because you'd have to be a business owner to owe this much olive oil or this much wheat or whatever, right? So he calls in the business owner. He said, how much do you owe? 800? Let's make it 4. Well, the business owner's like, well, great. Why? Well, we've always had good chemistry, you and I. I like working with you, right? Let's cut your bill in half. You're just a valued person in this community and blah, 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 right? And the guy's like, wow, yeah. And he does that 3 times. He takes 3 and the story could be 14 times. You get the point. Jesus is telling a story. Like, he calls in business and the idea is, you don't know this, but I'm about to be fired. And when I put my application in at your company, I think you might hire because I just saved you about $2 million, right? And this is his plan. Okay. And then as we go, let's jump to verse 8. We watch what happens. Again, the rich man admires the dishonest rascal. Not, you see, because he's a dishonest rascal, but because he faced reality, he formed a concrete plan, and he took immediate action. Oh, let's talk about you and I for a minute. Can we get kind of personal? Let's start with that first one. How do you do in your life when it comes to facing reality? My wife did something some time ago that I still think was a bad decision. Can I share it with you? I'll go, whether you give me permission or not, I'll go ahead and share it with you. We have this room in our home where we try to stay fit, especially we live in Wyoming and there's wintertime and you know the story, right? So you got to do something inside. And so we have this room, and there's an elliptical and a treadmill, and there's a weight bench over here. And then right in the middle, she put this device. Maybe you have one of these devices. What happens is you step up on it, and it provides you immediate information. You got one of these? You got one of these? I never accept the information it provides. There's an immediate disagreement on this, and I step off. Now, what I do, I don't know if you've tried this, but I kick it a little. You kick it a little? Tap it, kick it, do something? You do, oh, yeah, there's some kickers in here. Okay. So you step off, right? And then you step on. What I have discovered is that sometimes it was up to a half a pound off. That's what I've discovered. And I'm set staring at information. How do you do in all the areas of your life facing reality? I think we get pretty good at avoiding it. I actually have noticed in my life, God's pointed out that I tend to like to spend more time with people who help me avoid reality, not the people who help me face reality. I tend to engage in activities and be with people and et cetera, et cetera. I tend to arrange my whole life so that I don't have to face real information. Sometimes it's just a matter of filling up my life so that there's no time for that reality to even be thought about, right? How do you do? Now, see, I've been praying for you all week. I've been praying for these next 20 to 30 seconds because I don't know where you're avoiding reality, but your Creator does. And I'm going to pause for just a moment and ask that right now, He through your mind, helps you acknowledge an area in your life where you're not facing reality. Just give some space for that. It can be financially, relationally. It can be your spiritual journey. God's calling you maybe to have a conversation about spiritual stuff with a friend. Maybe there's something in your life. Maybe there's a habit. There's just an area, and I've been praying all week that God would help you right now. It can be in your relationships in lots of ways. It could be in your work life. Something in your boundaries that you haven't set in some area of your life. And as He does that today, I want to now go to the second thing this man does that the Master commends. The second thing is he forms a concrete plan. And he has accountability. He goes public with his plan. He forms a very concrete plan of action. And you remember at the end when Jesus said kind of this offensive thing, like followers of God, church people types, all this are worse at this than people in rebellion from God that are far from God. Here's I think one of the places where that's obvious. I've been around church now for a long, long time. And I've seen this over and over. I've seen it in life groups and in other settings and in just our one-on-one relationship with God. Whenever we do face reality and there's this hard thing, it can be our tendency to spiritualize our way past it. Because we know spiritual sounding things. So it's like, yeah, we are struggling, my wife and I, relationally. Or there's this financial practice in my life, or there's this, boy, this addiction that's really still a big deal. Whatever it is, right? Here's what we can do. Yeah, I'm really going to take some time and be praying about that. And people around us sometimes, let's just take some time and pray about that. And I bet God is saying, praying is great, but it's time for you to do something, right? It's time for you to take some action. Let's form a plan. Now, again, the words we use are so dangerous for us because there's truth in them. We should pause and we should seek God's counsel in our life, and we should have friends gather and pray for us. We should do these things, and we should say to each other, you know what? Don't let that get you so far down that you can't trust God, because we're all fallen and we're all sinful. We should encourage each other. These are all true things. But if we're being honest, sometimes we use these things to put reality back where we want it to be, sort of out of our minds. This man doesn't do this, and Jesus commends him. And then thirdly, not only does he form a plan, but he takes immediate action, like he does it now. Now, Jesus intentionally sets his story up so the guy only has a few hours. So he has no choice, right? Most of our challenges, if we don't do the right thing today, it's not going to completely ruin our lives. It will over time, but it won't today. So we can say tomorrow where we should be saying today. And we can use spiritual reasons for this. Like, God just hasn't made it clear to me that the timing's right. Or I really just haven't had an open door for that conversation. Or whatever it is that you do. I'm just using me, okay? I'm a master at doing or saying I'll do tomorrow what I should do today. I'm a master at that, right? I'm like the kamikaze pilot who flew 17 missions. That's me, okay? Just think about that for just a second, okay? It's the idea of being real active, real energetic, doing a lot of good. It's just not the thing that I actually am supposed to be doing right now today, having faced reality. It's not the thing. So just an example that's a little more surface level, but it's just an example in my life. Like, when I turn 50, it's weird. It's like a switch happened, and I suddenly hated working out. If you've not experienced this yet in your life, just hang on for a while. Maybe you experienced this at 12. I don't know. But for me, it was just like, you know what? I think I'm past working out in my life. That's just like, I'm past that. Of course, I'm not, right? A little bit of muscle mass and a little bit of fitness still matters. It actually more than it ever has. But it's just, so I did this, right? I faced reality. I formed a plan. My plan was, I'm going to spend this room I talked about earlier. I've got to spend a certain amount of time, 3 days a week in that room in addition to other stuff. Like, I formed a plan. Here's what I discovered. I scheduled it at a certain time on those 3 days. At that time, on those 3 days, I am uber productive in lots of other ways. Have you discovered this? I get tons of other stuff done. I can enjoy vacuuming my house at that time for some reason. Like, it's amazing how I can distract myself and become, it's just, I've had great prayer times at that time of the day. Like, really good stuff. Doing really great, amazing stuff. Just not the thing, you see. Are you good? Are you good at arranging your life, either with activity or in some other way, to say tomorrow when you should be saying today, maybe even using spiritual stuff? Oh, Jesus says the path to life is to face reality, form a plan, and take action. And don't use the fact that you're loved by God and following Jesus as an excuse not to do those things, by the way. And then there's this last part of the story. So you remember verse 8 says, and depending on the version you're reading in NIV or NLT or whatever, if you knew the scripture, like there's, they use different wording sometimes to say the same thing. And depending on that, the idea is this, that the owner looks at the manager and says, great job. I appreciate that. And he takes no further action. Because he could have. The normal thing would be, hey, I know I said that you owed, you know, the manager told you that you only owed 400, but he was being fired. There's no contract there. He didn't have that authority. You only owe, you still owe 800. And I know I said you owed 1,000, or he said you had less, 700 or whatever it was, but you really do own 1,000. I mean, come on, we know he's being fired, right? That would be the normal thing, because he lost millions of dollars in this scenario. The owner does nothing. He's just like, great job. And in Jesus's day, when that much debt had been forgiven in a community, in a village, there would have been a huge party that night. They would have had the fatted calf. They wouldn't do a pig roast because they're Jewish, right? But they do this big thing, right? This big celebration, and there'd be this big thing. When the owner finds out about it, he'd have been in the middle of hearing about the celebration and then hearing about what happened. And here's the deal. The manager, the dishonest manager, he bet everything that when the owner heard about this, he just let it ride. Because he wouldn't want to stop the celebration in town. He'd love that. He'd love that there was a party in town. He'd love all that. And he would just let it ride. Here's the way to understand it. He bet on the goodness of the master. He bet everything. It's like, yeah, this may not be a great plan, but I bet the master won't stop the celebration. He loves people so much, he'll make it work and he'll let it ride. And here's what Jesus is saying to you and you and you and me. You have this reality in your life that I want to help you with, because it's not how I created you to live. If you'll form a plan and if you'll take action, you can bet everything that I'll have your back. I love this because I got to tell you, I have formed some really dumb plans in my life. You with me? I mean, we could spend all morning just talking about the dumb stuff I've tried. Right? And then, even worse, I've implemented it with even dumber actions. Like, as I look back, I'm like, I can't believe it. How did that work? That wasn't a wise plan, and I did it poorly. How in the world could that have worked? Here's what I am learning. Here's what I've learned. The one I follow, this person who created me and is king of the universe, he partners with me, and I'm betting everything on him. I'm betting everything on him. And the invitation applies to you this morning. If you'll take that reality and you'll prayerfully form a plan, and if you'll start to take the first step, oh, you'll discover a God who wants to partner with an imperfect child. And there is no other way to live. And then back to Galatians. One more thing about Galatians. You see, Paul's talking to a church, and he says, here's the deal. If you'll decide not to think too much of yourselves, and if you'll carry each other's burdens, oh, that's how we were meant to live. You see this group of people right here today. If you choose to say, here I am, I'll face reality. I'll share this with some people. I'll share with some people what's the reality in my life and where I'm getting it wrong. And I'm going to invite some people to walk with me and form a plan and partner with me to take immediate action. Oh, if that happens, now it's a church. Now it's the kind of place Jesus dreamed of. And he says, if that kind of community gets formed, the gates of hell can't stand up against that. That'll change the world. That'll change people's lives. That'll change the world. That'll be amazing. I want that. And I'll walk with those people. If they're willing to do that, if they're willing to face reality together and form a plan and partner with each other in their life and walk together, I'll join them. I'll walk with them. I'll live with them. We'll be church. We'll be church together. And I'll change their lives. This is the invitation this morning. But it requires this. You have to step on, accept the invitation, receive the information, and invite the maker of the universe to help do something about it. It's your call. Father in heaven, I have fallen deeply and madly in love with you. For so many reasons, some of which we sang about this morning, but one of the biggest is that when I am willing to be vulnerable with a group of people and in your presence and say, I need, I lack, I'm not there, when I'm willing to face who I am, I have discovered that the journey you then take me on, while sometimes difficult, you're with me and you have my back. And no matter how poorly I plan or how poorly I take action, the God of the universe has my back. And oh, do I love you for that. Oh, do I love you for that. You're awesome. And I elevate you above everything else in this room right now. You're awesome. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.